VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year. Hello and welcome to The Games, the podcast of record from The Times. I'm Chris Skinner, and from here until the end of the Olympic Games, we'll be providing all the essential information and opinion you need to stay on top of all the major events. You can get in touch with us via Twitter. Just tweet your thoughts on London 2012 or this programme using the hashtag MyOlympics. So the sun has come out, the traffic has ground to the predicted standstill, the torch is passing through the streets of London, and rumours are abound about what we will see in the opening ceremony. So let's get a state of play from London 2012. First up, Richard Whitehead, Times journalist and editor of the Times book of Olympic heroes. How important are these games to the UK? Do we really need to put on a show here?
Oh, I think absolutely that. And I think anyone who is even the most sceptical of the value of having the Games would think that now we're here, it's good. It's important that they're good. It's important that the sun shines, and it is at the moment. Fingers crossed that carries on. And it's, you know, important that they go well, we have some memorable sport, and that people around the world see London as a cool and happening place.
There have been the inevitable bad news stories about ticketing, transport, costs, security. How well do you think that the preparation is actually going?
I think the preparation is, well, we all know that in terms of the completion of the venues, it's absolutely superb and miles ahead of any other city that's ever had the Games, as far as I'm aware. I mean, the fact that the outline of that stadium has become such a recognisable landmark already is just because it's been finished for so long and it's been ready for so long. I've been looking at pictures of the park today on the news, and that looks absolutely fantastic. So I think the preparation's gone pretty well. Obviously, the security, we've had our bad news stories with the security, yeah, with a bit of transport. I think people have to remember that it's just such an enormous undertaking, logistically, and I can't imagine there's ever been an Olympic Games when something hasn't gone wrong in the build-up. And let's hope with the security we've had our problem now and we've overcome it.
If you look now at Greece and you look at Athens and you look at some of the venues there, which are already just 8 years on, it seems like they're falling down. I get the impression that's not going to happen with London. I know obviously certain stadia will be ripped down, but do you think there's genuinely a legacy in place here?
I think that remains to be seen, Chris, to be honest. I think it's obviously vitally important that there is, but I would be dubious about saying that's definitely going to happen yet. I mean, I think, you know, all the stuff about a major football club going into the Olympic Stadium, I think that's a shame. We need a good, yeah, top-class athletic stadium, and I think it's a shame if the Olympic Stadium can't be kept as that.
What about the Olympics as a news story? Obviously, huge sporting stories will come from this. But to a paper like The Times, how big is the Olympic Games?
It's absolutely massive for The Times, and the amount of work we've put into it and the preparation we've put into it emphasises that, really. It's people come to The Times for great events. People, you know, royal weddings, etc., etc., the Jubilee. We generally do extremely well for those. We put on sales for those things. Big news stories, you know, obviously not very often happy news stories, but big news stories, people buy The Times because they want the definitive word, the definitive verdict on it. And, you know, obviously we're hoping, and I'm sure it will, that that effect will kick in again for the Olympic Games.
Finally, the Times book of Olympic heroes, and I believe it's out on Amazon later on in the week. Just tell us a little bit about that, and maybe who London 2012 you think is a worthy entry into that book?
The Times book of Olympic heroes will be out, as you say, it's an e-book. It's on Amazon later in the week, Wednesday, we hope, fingers crossed. It features some of the great stories of Olympic history and how we told them to our readers the next day. So Seb Coe in Moscow in 1980, yeah. David Emery, Mexico City, 1968, Chris Hoy in Beijing. They're all in there. Eric Liddell, anyone who's been to see Chariots of Fire. Eric Liddell in 1924. They're all in there. They're sort of classic reports.
Yeah.
And who will be in this time? Well, Bradley Wiggins, that's an easy name, isn't it? We're all rooting for Jessica Ennis, obviously, because she's written for us for a number of years and, you know, is extremely high profile. But I wouldn't mind betting that there'll be somebody who we don't necessarily think of in the build-up who emerges as one of the great figures. That seems to be the way it happens quite often.
I'm still saying the Brownies. I think this Olympics could be all about the Brownies. I want to be on record in our first
could
show.
Could well be. Yeah. Get that marked down.
Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
So if you're looking at a fantastic sports photograph in the Times today, there's every chance it was taken by one of these two men, Mark Asplund or Graham Hughes. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank
you. You look very nervous on that introduction there.
No. Well, some of the phraseology made Graham slightly nervous when you mentioned the word brilliant photography.
Mark, away from the people that you'll be photographing, have you had much of a chance to actually see the setting in which you'll be taking the photographs yet? A lot of new venues, have they led to any inspiration yet so far?
Absolutely. Graham and I were down at the Olympic Park just a couple of days ago to pick up our final accreditation bits and bobs, these photo bibs that we all have to wear. And I have to say now, since seeing it as a building site and now coming back just a couple of days ago, where it is literally shiny and new, you do get very much a sense of the hairs on the back of your neck standing up.
And you'll have been to many major sporting stadiums around the world. How do you think that the Olympic Stadium and surrounding venues are going to stand up against those?
Well, to be honest with you, if you take it as the Olympic Games, Beijing was. An awe-inspiring stadium in the day and almost especially at night. It's one of these rare stadiums. It's like a bit like the Camp Nou in Barcelona, which looks more impressive when it's empty. The Bird's Nest looked unbelievably impressive late at night when it was all lit up, for example. And the same was true with Athens and Sydney. They all have got their own little facets of just this amazing stadium. But equally, I think when Graham and I were there, you look at the athletic stadium and it really has got the wow factor.
Graham, you've captured a bit of Jess Ennis in the build-up to the Games, haven't you?
Yeah.
Tell me about the project you were involved in with her and the impressions that she gave as a person and as an athlete.
Well, I first met Jess in 2008, a month before the Olympics. Unfortunately, when she didn't compete, she was in plaster. I went up to Sheffield to meet her for the first time. And she was quite a shy, retiring girl. Not the sort of person that I've come to know now. She's very, very outgoing, really friendly, and really good laugh. I've got to know her through competitions and also through studio work. The competitions, just purely from a photographic point of view, I've kind of learnt how she looks when she jumps over things and runs over things, lands in sand, lands on the high jump. So that's the experience that you really want going into an Olympics, because you only get one chance to get sort of the great moment, and if you know what the athlete's going to do or how the athlete's going to look doing hurdling or high jumping, it's a major advantage. Getting to know her as a person sort of been a great experience as well, because she's just a normal girl that you would have in your family or someone from school, a friend like that. Yeah, she's very cool.
Finally, what are you looking forward to? We're a few days away now. Are there any particular events that you cannot wait to be looking at, with the camera ready to go?
I think both of us, and even if you had someone in off the street to answer that question, everybody was going to say, oh, you know, we can't wait for the 100 metres, we can't wait for the cycling, we can't wait for some of the, you know, Rebecca Adlington in the pool, for example, of which Graham and I will be focusing our lenses on all of the main blue ribbon, high pressure moments of the Olympics. But I think for Graham and I think it's going to be very important for the Times coverage is that we're expected to deliver some dramatic images every day. And if our dramatic and the most beautiful pictures appear from the fencing, then so be it. And I'll be more than happy if that happens.
I'm joined now by Aisling O'Connor, the Times Olympics correspondent. Aisling, you're on location now where you are probably going to be embedded for the next several weeks. First impressions, is everything actually working over there?
It seems to be. When I arrived this morning, there was a helicopter buzzing overhead because the IOC members and the Olympic, the IOC president were having a tour of the Olympic Village. So it feels very much like the Games are about to happen. You know, the military presence is high. There's a buzz around the place that there hasn't been until today.
I saw elements of Jacques Rogge's press conference from a couple of days ago, and there was no shortage of heavyweight questions he had to deal with, you know, everything from Israel to the Falklands, on top of maybe the odd sports question as well. I guess it's fair play that at this stage the IOC president will get asked such questions.
Yeah, and he's used to it. It's par for the course with all games, and he's a sort of astute politician. He has perfected the art of saying stuff but not actually saying very much. So he addresses and answers questions, but actually he doesn't really give much away. He's the Jeffrey Boycott of Olympic commentators, if you like. He doesn't get easily ruffled or easily excited, which actually for the Olympic movement is quite a good thing. His predecessor was a very flamboyant Spaniard who was prone to verbose. He was the one that said that Sydney was the best games ever. London probably, I think, may well be the best games ever, but we'll never get that kind of accolade from Rog because he's just not of that character.
Now, Chris Hoyer is appearing in today's newspaper. He is, you know, announced as the flag bearer yesterday. You spoke to him earlier on, and he spoke about Bradley Wiggins and the impact he might have on the cycling team.
Yeah, he just said that everyone had been obviously in the training camp at the cycling team, the track cycling team are training in Newport and at the Velodrome there, and they've obviously been watching the Tour de France, and it's Team Sky is run by Dave Brailsford, who's also their performance director and orchestrated their fantastic success in Beijing, where they won 8 gold medals, including one on the road from Nicole Cook, and totally dominated the world. And I think they've got a zing in their step that if they didn't have before, they've certainly got an ability to sort of raise their game to another level, because Wiggins is going to come back as part of that track cycling team, but also as the first British man to win the Tour de France, and that's a huge morale booster. And certainly Chris Hoy said that he feels that the whole of the cycling team is going to rub off on them, and that they really just they're champing at the bit and can't wait to start. But unfortunately, the event in the Velodrome, the action there doesn't kick off until August the 2nd, so which actually gives him the chance to carry the flag at the opening ceremony, because he has time after the show, which ends quite late, and which has ruled quite a lot of other people out of attending the opening ceremony. And an example would be Ben Ainslie, who's in the sailing, but he's down in Weymouth, and the sailing starts the day 2 days after the opening ceremony. So he's going to go to he's been to 4 Olympics, Chris Hoy, and he's never been to an opening ceremony.
Wow.
So this will be his first, and he's looking forward to it, and he was voted the unanimous choice of fellow athletes to carry the flag, which means that he will lead the team into the stadium at about 11:30 p.m. on Friday night.
One final piece of housekeeping before we let you go. If you listen to this via the Times iPad app, you can also get the programme as an MP3 via iTunes. And if you listen via iTunes, you can get the show on our iPad app, where it comes with some amazing accompanying images relevant to all the topics we cover. Throughout the Games, the iPad edition will be updating at 5 a.m, 5 p.m. and 10:30 p.m, including reports on all the day's events, amazing picture galleries and other visual feasts. If you aren't yet a Times subscriber, you can go to www.timespacks.co.uk Today, where there are various subscriptions on offer to suit your reading habits. And don't forget, you can get in touch with the MyOlympics hashtag on Twitter. Our next show will be with you tomorrow morning. Bye-bye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.